Just a quick heads up, this episode is about Vermont's history of adult entertainment, and it includes sexually explicit content and language.
From Vermont Public, this is Brave Little State. I'm Sabine Pooks at the Tunbridge World's Fair.
Hi, my name is Sabine. I'm a reporter with Vermont Public. I'm doing a story, a historical story about the girly shows that they used to have here.
Oh, God, he'll tell you.
I never got into one.
Why not?
Because I was too young.
How old did you have to be?
I didn't know. We used to sneak in, try to get under the tent, but they always caught us. That was a long time ago, though.
He and his brother. He's not talking about me. He and his brother.
Did you go to the shows? Do you remember them?
Once.
Once?
Yep.
Can you give me some memories?
Oh,
Oh, the girly shows.
Do you remember the girly shows?
Yeah. They called this a drunkard's reunion, the fair.
Drunkard's reunion?
Drunkard's reunion, yeah. And the girly shows were right down at the very other end of the fair where you go in. And my folks said, well, I was, you know, probably 15, 16, they said, you can go to the fair, but don't go near the girly shows.
I'm on Antique Hill, between booths of maple syrup makers and chair weavers, dressed in old-timey costumes. It's all very historical here. People at the fair, they love fair history. But there's this one piece of history that no one's really talking about. The girly shows.
In the same breath that anybody said going to Tunbridge Fair, somebody would say, oh, at night?
Implying
that
they went in the afternoon, too.
Yeah, but it's certainly implying that they might take in the girly shows.
The girly shows were basically strip shows, or burlesque shows, that would travel from fair to fair every summer, landing in towns like Tunbridge. They lasted up until the 1970s, and there's nothing about the girly shows on display here. No photos on the walls of Heritage Hall. No real sign they ever existed. Still, when I ask people at the fair about them, it's clear they left quite the impression.
What did you hear about the girly shows from the people you grew up around?
They were disgusting, they said. People that went, they were disgusting. They said bad things about ladies. Ladies don't deserve that.
I knew that all I knew was that we weren't allowed to the fair as a kid. We weren't allowed to the fair except on Sundays. That was my family's rule. Saturday night was too wild. You didn't take your kids. Now, my parents came, but no kids.
Do you think they went to the girly shows?
Not my mother. Nah.
You had to be 18 to get in, and there were no women allowed, though it wasn't very hard to skirt the rules. The shows made a lot of money for the fairs, and just about everyone was getting a piece of the pie. The Orange County Sheriff's Department, they ran one of the tents, according to local lore. Still, a lot of people snuck in.
So you get under the tent, and...
You just watch them.
Yeah.
Just watch them do their thing.
Do you know anything about the girls who would perform in the shows, or did you ever meet any of them?
No. I think they came from away. I think they got them in here from other places.
My recollection is that most of them were probably not from anywhere in Vermont, for sure.
Were they sort of separated from the rest of the fair?
No. No, this one was happened to be right next to Floral Hall.
Is this your husband?
Yeah, let's see. Hey.
Hi.
Hi. David. Wait a minute.
What?
Did you ever go to a girly show here at the fair?
Why?
Well, she kind of liked to know what it was like when the girly shows were here. And I told her, I went the last year. Remember Jim and I snuck in, I told you about? Did you ever go?
Yeah.
How old were you when you first went?
Well, I'm not criminating myself.
Were you more than 14?
Yeah.
15?
You had to be 18 to get in there.
And you weren't?
I wasn't 18. Snuck in.
How'd you sneak in?
Going to the tent or around through the exit if nobody was watching it.
Well, I'll tell you a story. It's a true story that the minister at the church, okay, was preaching. It was a lady, new minister. She was preaching that we have to get rid of the girly shows at the fair, okay? So the following week, the board of deacons met, and they fired the minister.
Wow. True
story. Right, Nancy?
That minister may have lost the battle, but she won the war. There are no more girly shows at the Tunbridge World's Fair. The only dancing these days comes from the famous Ed Larkin dancers, who contradance in elaborate period costumes. I didn't know about the girly shows before. The person who first brought them to my attention, she grew up near the Tunbridge World's Fair long after the girly shows had already gone away. These days, she works as a stripper out of state, and she prefers we don't use her full name or her voice in the story. She has never really felt like she could talk about her profession openly in Vermont. She also can't work here, since there are no strip clubs here anymore. Vermont is actually the only state in New England without one. But then she found out about the girly shows and the fact that they were so close to where she grew up, and she got excited. She wanted to know more, so she asked us. Why did the girly shows close down at the county fairs? And why are there no strip clubs in Vermont? Signed, a stripper who grew up in Vermont. Brave Little State is a proud member of the NPR network. Welcome.
You have to play with them. You do. You have to play with them. You have to tease them.
This is an old interview with a girly show performer who goes by Shorty.
Make them think they're a man. Even if you don't think they're any more than a dog, make them think, you know.
And here's another dancer who goes by Debbie.
You know, it's just a job. It's in your system, you know. Once you work for the fairs, it's in your system. Because last year I swore I'd never come back, and I'm back here. I don't know why. But I'm back.
In the early 1970s, a photographer named Susan Micellis, fresh out of college, decided to follow the girly shows around New England and document them, from Maine to Vermont, in Tunbridge, in Barton, and Essex Junction. Susan spoke with strippers and staff and members of the audience. She got up close in a way a lot of women couldn't, since only men were allowed into the tents to watch.
Being excluded is part of what motivated me. It's like the idea that I was a woman, I couldn't see what women were doing with these men was a big, you know, propelled me to try and sneak in.
She compiled her interviews and photographs into a 1976 book called Carnival Strippers and into recordings like the one you're hearing now.
Now look, this is a striptease show. It's a burlesque show. This show has been set aside for the men and men only. No ladies and no babies. You must be 18 years of age over to see this show because you're under 18. You wouldn't understand it if you was over 80. Lord knows you waited too long and your eyes couldn't stand it. Stallion, step out. Candy, step out. Stormy, the body is here. Now look, fellas.
While the fairgoers I talked to shied away from offering the lurid details, the interviews Susan got are really honest. The performers talked about what it was like to let audience members touch them, how at times they felt really strong, empowered, at others utterly disgusted and upset, and how the community of dancers they found backstage could be a sort of antidote to the loneliness and isolation that could come with the job. Susan spoke with one stripper named Lena, who started dancing in the girly shows when she was 18. She hoped it would help her get back on her feet after divorce and give her an opportunity to see the world. She had dreams of eventually dancing on TV.
I like attention, but I think what I like more about stripping is that it's sort of something that's not socially accepted. And you sort of have to live in a man's world. I think as far as being a stripper, it's as close to being in a man's world as you can be. I mean, like the way women look at it as sort of being revolutionary. I mean, and sort of being able for the first time in their lives to say, oh, I've got you eating out of the palm of my hand. Because, I mean, that's essentially what the men are doing when you're performing.
The tape of these performers from the 1970s, they're some of our only firsthand accounts from the girly show era. A lot of dancers, including Lena, have since passed away, and the girly shows themselves are long gone.
I began to hear that in 78 and 80, specifically in Vermont, the shows were closing. And there were lots of, people had different ideas about why.
This is a present-day interview with Susan, the photographer who documented the girly shows in the 70s.
You know, that the porno market and video market was starting. You know, the sex industry was sort of focused on pornography more than it was these kinds of events. And there were places opening up in small towns, you know, peep shows and things like that that weren't there before. So sex was more available, let's say, than waiting for the country fair to come to town once a year.
This idea that a new kind of sex industry was moving into the mainstream and replacing the girly shows, I heard that from a lot of people. One Vermonter remembered how, starting in the 1970s, you could watch a pornographic movie at the Midway Drive-In in Escutney. In the movie theater and in their home living rooms, people could indulge in their fantasies in private.
You know, it was a different experience. You weren't as exposed to the live, let's say. You know, live, people saw you, you know, interacting, so that you other people witnessed how you performed as a man in that setting. Whereas video, it doesn't implicate them in the same way.
Those softer cultural pressures seem to overlap with harder pressures from officials. The State Fair in Rutland got rid of its popular girly shows for a short time after an alderman and reverend, quote, paid the shows a visit. A few years later, in 1979, that fair would close its girly shows for good. The president of the State Fair Association was quoted saying that the shows were a thing of the past and that you could, quote, almost see on the street what you see in the shows. At least two other towns ended their girly shows that summer, too. In Tunbridge, fair director Euclid Farnham told a reporter that the time had come to, quote, move on to something more enlightening. Here's Euclid speaking about that decision in a 2015 video from a local business.
I'm convinced we would have lost the fair if we had not changed.
In 1979, the fair's board of directors voted to leave the girly shows behind completely.
When I turned 18, that was it, no more. That was the last year they had them.
Were people excited to have them gone? Were people bummed? What was their reaction?
Are you kidding? The men were all, what, no girly shows this year? What the heck are we going to do?
I think men were more disappointed than anybody else.
And now they've got rid of the demolition derby. That made a lot of people mad because they like to see people smashing up stuff. It's kind of turned into a family-oriented kind of fair, really.
This town is not about the girly show. It's not being a drunkard's reunion. Maybe there's a few drunks in town. There is in every town. But most people are pretty straightforward in this town. And they love history. They just love history.
Do people talk about the history of the fairs from the girly show era?
I hardly ever hear that talked about. I think they're glad that's over with.
While stripping was moving out of Vermont's fairgrounds, it was springing up in other places, local bars and strip clubs. In the 80s and early 90s, you could find nude dancing around the state, according to newspaper articles at the time. There was Shooters in Barrie, Hollywood's Hard Bodies and the White River Amusement Pub, or The Wrap, in White River Junction, Uncle Sam's in Rutland. For a while, there were also plans to open a club on one of the main drags in South Burlington. But people in South Burlington, they didn't like that.
I bring this meeting to order, please. We'll open this meeting as we do all city council meetings with a pledge of allegiance to the flag.
It's 1995 in a middle school cafeteria in South Burlington. A row of men wearing ties and dress pants stand in front of a curtain stage.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic.
After the pledge, they sit. A woman brings over two cups of coffee. William Simonetti, council chair, he takes the mic.
At this point in time, I declare open the public hearing on the public indecency ordinance.
This public indecency ordinance, it's come up in response to a plan to open a strip club in town called Club Fantasy on Williston Road. William, the council member, he doesn't want to mention Club Fantasy straight up in his presentation. So he says this.
It is the purpose of this ordinance to regulate public indecency, including public nudity, which is deemed to be a public nuisance. Section 3, definitions. Nudity shall mean the showing of the human...
And we get one of my favorite euphemisms of all time.
Or the depiction of covered male genitals in a discernibly turgid state.
Anyway, the meeting is packed with hundreds of South Burlington residents. Many do not want Club Fantasy to open in their town.
I grew up in Vermont for 25 years, and I think this is a disgrace to Vermont and to the city of South Burlington. First of all, Vermont is known for its wholesomeness, I think, and people come here to see our state for its niceness, not for dancing naked at Club Fantasy.
I'm asking you to hold firm in your ordinance and assure you if you do, you will have God's blessing. I believe if you take a stand for what is right, Mr. Cleese and his lawyers will not be fighting against the city, but the Almighty himself. Thank you.
There is a lot of this, shall we say, discernibly turgid testimony. And that Mr. Clish, the one resident mentioned, that's Sean Clish. Club Fantasy is his idea.
We plan on putting on all types of dancing, whether it be dancing for patrons. We plan on putting live performances.
At the time, Sean's young, just 28 years old, and he's a stripper himself, who sometimes works bachelor parties and work events. He's the haircut of a 1990s football player, and he looks agitated as he fields council members' questions about the club.
So it is a matter of record, then, that it is your intention, if granted this permit, that included in dancing would be nude dancing.
Yes.
The council approves the indecency ordinance, which effectively bans nudity inside public South Burlington businesses. So later that night, when Sean's applications go before the council...
And the application is denied.
His fate's pretty much sealed. So full nudity is off the table. But ultimately, South Burlington does begrudgingly allow the club to open, as long as dancers cover up, at a minimum, in pasties and G-strings. But here's another twist. The partial victory is short-lived.
Hello, Sean speaking.
Hi, Sean. This is Sabine Pooks. I'm a reporter with Vermont Public.
This is the Sean Clish of Club Fantasy Infamy. By the way, Sean's last name is spelled cliche, even though it's not pronounced that way. Missed opportunity.
Request for you. I'm putting together a story for the podcast we do about why there are no strip clubs in Vermont, and I've been going down some rabbit holes.
I guess you've been going down a few rabbit holes, huh?
I sure have.
Sean's almost 60 now, and he splits his time between Florida and New York. He says he no longer likes the culture or politics of Vermont, the culture and politics that kept his business in flux for 2 years.
We were open and closed several times. I'm going to say probably about a total of 6 months of being open.
The city kept nabbing the club for violating its rules. Sean sued them for denying his licenses. And at one point, the club even offered a drink special called the City Council Shuffle, vodka and orange juice, also known as a screwdriver. It got so dramatic that a local playwright even wrote a play about it all, called The Taboo of Fantasy. But even when the Vermont Supreme Court ruled partially in Sean's favor, it was too late. Sean was out of cash.
Basically, we were out of business due to a lack of funds.
When the club closed, Sean says the club fantasy dancers moved out of state to find work elsewhere. Other city councils saw what happened in South Burlington and quickly passed anti-indecency ordinances of their own, like in Richmond, Essex, Shelburne, Vergennes, and Williston. The shadow of club fantasy loomed large. Even Vermont's only Hooters location lost its liquor license in 2008 for holding a bikini contest that, quote, got a little crazy. And it, too, would eventually close.
Well, I can tell you there's a lot of laws on the books that were enacted because of me.
Effectively, the door was closed on new strip joints in Vermont. But strippers and sex workers, they're still here.
Like, putting this organization together with everybody has, like, it's impacted the survivability, you know, of, like, living in this state.
That's when we come back. After the club fantasy saga in the late 1990s, a bunch of Vermont towns passed laws that essentially legally barred strip clubs from opening in Vermont. Planet Rock in Barrie was the last holdout. It's a club that most people will mention these days when Vermont strip clubs come up in conversation. And the story of Planet Rock is linked to the story of club fantasy. One Burlington Free Press reporter speculated that Planet Rock was able to avoid scrutiny when it opened in the 90s because the other club was taking up so much oxygen in the public eye. Still, Planet Rock was plagued with its own troubles. In 1998, city councilors in Barrie ruled that dancers had to stay an arm's length away from patrons.
And even in that club, two lap dances were 4 feet away with your top on. You got more
sexy.
Yeah. Super duper.
Henry Banks of Montpelier used to work at Planet Rock as a dancer. They came to Vermont in the mid-2010s to farm, and they worked at the club in the last year and a half before it closed. They remember Planet Rock as a true dive, with a sun-bleached cardboard cutout of a woman standing in front.
What I remember from that time, we had the same four dancers on rotation. The clientele was, like, very working class and friendly, and actually oftentimes, like, still some of my favorite today. Like, farmers would come in and we'd, like, talk shop, you know? Like, never happens in other clubs, you know what I mean? Very cute.
Henry says it felt like the club had its heyday in the 1990s. And ultimately, it struggled with a lot of the same issues that others did, like tightening regulations and an aging clientele.
I feel like everyone was just kind of there keeping the thing alive for a few, until they figured something out. You know, it was kind of sad. Yeah.
In the mid-2010s, Planet Rock did close for good. Henry turned to other jobs like farming and started traveling around to find stripping and sex work elsewhere. It's clear from old newspaper articles and records from old meetings why Vermonters blocked strip clubs from opening in their communities. Morality, family values, the perceived danger that opening up a club might bring. These are the same things that came up when fair officials closed down the girly shows a few decades before. But here's the thing. Other New England states do have clubs. Vermont is the only New England state without one. Just last fall, a gentleman's club called Sugas opened in Colebrook, New Hampshire, right on the border with Vermont's Northeast Kingdom. So why, then, is Vermont this outlier?
I'm curious, like, why you think, what you think it is about Vermont.
Yeah.
Where we've decided culturally, like, this isn't something we're going to have, and people are going to try to shut them down every chance they get.
Have you read anything about, like, the history around the kind of tourism Vermont's tried to attract and, like, the absence of billboards and why that was?
Henry is referencing the laws that Vermont has put in place to keep the state looking and feeling a certain way, like Vermont's 1968 law banning billboards. These are laws, in part, about the image Vermont projects to the world. An image, as one testifier in South Burlington put it, of wholesomeness and niceness.
The same ethos that said billboards will attract poor and marginalized tourists, and we don't want that riffraff in our neighborhood, is the same ethos that says where there are billboards, there are strip clubs. And where there's strip clubs, there's riffraff.
A few years ago, Henry co-created a nonprofit called the Ishtar Collective. The group advocates for the rights of sex workers in Vermont. Because while it's true that there are no more girly shows at the fairs, and stripping has all but disappeared from Vermont, strippers and sex workers more broadly, they're still here. There are people who create content online, who travel around and strip out of state, and even people who do sex work in state, even though it's still criminalized here in Vermont. One of the focuses of Ishtar is just to talk more openly about sex work. And they're creating the kind of community that people like Henry haven't always been able to find in Vermont.
I had a hard time when I was like traveling and doing sex work. I had a hard time like securing community. So like putting this organization together with everybody has like given me an essence of that. And it's been like, honestly, like really, it's impacted the survivability, you know, of like living in this state. I think that it would have been a lot harder.
Today's question asker, the one who signed her question, a stripper who grew up in Vermont, she doesn't want to be identified in this story. However, there are a couple things she wants to put out there. First, she says she wishes she knew more about the women who performed in the girly shows at Vermont fairs. What were their bonds like with each other? Did they feel welcome in Vermont? Did any of them live locally? With so much of their stories hidden behind scandals and sensation, she wished she could understand more about who they were as people. And she just wants them to know how grateful she is for them. She says she's so proud to be connected to them, to this lineage of strippers in Vermont. And one more thing. If our question asker were to ever work as a stripper in Vermont, she's already got a stage name picked out. Sugarbush. Thanks for listening to the show, and thanks to Sugarbush for the great question. If you have a question about Vermont that you want us to answer, ask it at bravelittlestate.org. This episode was reported by me, Sabine Pooks. It was produced and edited by Josh Crane and Burgess Brown. Additional support from Sophie Stevens. Angela Evansy is Brave Little State's executive producer. Our theme music is by Ty Gibbons. Other music by Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks to Liam Elder Connors, Jeff Haig, Steve Taylor, Scott Rogers, Vern Strong, Elaine Howe, Gail Weesey, Jordan Mitchell, Matt Sitkowski, Lydia Flanagan, and everyone I spoke to at the Tunbridge Fair. That's Gary and Martha Howe, Baxter Doty, Dave Smith, Luis and Frank Meir, Elliot Morse, Betsy and David Race, and Gary Young. And a massive thanks to Susan Micellis for letting us use materials from Carnival Strippers and Carnival Strippers Revisited. Without her, we'd be missing some really critical voices in the story. Brave Little State is a production of Vermont Public and a proud member of the NPR network. If you like our show, you can make a gift at bravelittlestate.org/donate, or just leave us a nice voicemail on the BLS hotline, 802-552-4880. We'll be back soon with more listener-powered Vermont journalism.